Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I'm going to read this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 21, Text 33, maybe 34. I'll just say the Sanskrit. Oh, some of you have your little doodads. Anyway, Maitreya Uvacha, so Maitreya is narrating. Evam tam anubhasyata bhagavan pratyag akshajaha jagama bindhu sarasa sarasvatya parishyatat. Maitreya went on, thus having spoken to Kardama Muni, the Lord who reveals himself only when the senses are in Krishna consciousness, departed from that lake called Bindu Sarovara, which was encircled by the river Saraswati. So, the scene is deep in the forest, in beginning of the life of Brahma in Satya Yuga, one of the direct sons of Lord Brahma, Kardama Muni, having been requested by Lord Brahma to assist him in creating good praja, had gone to the forest to undergo austerities and meditate upon the personality of Godhead for a long period of time, and not only the Lord responded to his prayers, but he came. Just every time I describe this, the picture in my mind is really, it's wonderful paintings. Deep in a forest, here comes Lord Vishnu riding on the back of Garuda, standing on the shoulders of Garuda with his forearms, with the symbols of Vishnu, radiating very happy smile, his eyes fixed upon Kardama, who so much appreciated his devotion. Kardama pays his obeisances in ecstasy and offers prayers, and the Lord has just, the previous verse, he just finished speaking with a voice that sounded like thunder. Several things. I've come because of your, you've won me by your devotion. So I've come. And second is, I know your heart's desire and it shall be taken care of. The position of the devotee of the Lord is never spoiled. Their aspirations for service to the Lord shall be fulfilled. And he then, so because he's gone to the forest for purification to help his father, that means he's desiring a wife. And in addition, in his heart is in pure devotion, he desires in parental affection to have the Supreme Lord as his son. So Vishnu says it's going to happen. You're in 2 days' time, Swayambhuva Manu and Shatrurupa will come and they're going to make a marriage proposal, and you should say yes. They're going to request you to marry their daughter, Devahuti. She's as qualified as you are. She's perfectly eligible to be your good wife. and in due course of time you will bear 9 daughters and 1 son, and I will be the son. And I will instruct my mother in Sankhya philosophy. He uses a different term, Tattvasarena, the essence of truth. I'll explain all this to Devahuti. And you will become perfect. Very important part of the dialogue. You will become perfect by acting upon your material desires with offering everything to me. Your heart will become cleansed. You will realize me in full, and you will be with me. So he finishes speaking, and Maitreya is narrating all of this to Vidura. He then says that Lord Vishnu then left, having spoken in this way. And it gives the detail of where they were, or where Kardama was. Of course, what Bindu Sarovar looks like today is not what it looked like then, I'm sure. But on the bank of the Bindu Sarovar, near the encircled by the river Saraswati. So the purport. One word in this verse is very significant. The Lord is stated here to be Pratyag Akshaja. Pratyag Akshaja. He is imperceivable to material senses, but still he can be seen. This appears to be contradictory. We have material senses, but how can we see the Supreme Lord? He is called Adhokshaja, which means that he cannot be seen by the material senses. Akshaja means knowledge perceived by material senses, quote unquote. Because the Lord is not an object that can be understood by speculation with our material senses, he is also called Ajita. He will conquer, but no one can conquer him. What does it mean then that still he can be seen? It is explained that no one can hear the transcendental name of Krishna. No one can understand his transcendental form, and no one can assimilate his transcendental pastimes. It is not possible. Then how is it possible that he can be seen and understood? When one is trained in devotional service and renders service unto him, gradually one's senses are purified of material contamination. When one's senses are thus purified, then one can see, one can understand, one can hear, and so on. The purification of the material senses and perception of the transcendental form, name, and quality of Krishna are combined together in one word, Pratyak Akshaja, which is used here. Oh, nice. Evam tam anubhasyata bhagavan pratyag akshaja chagama bindu sarasaha sarasvatya parishyatat. Maitreya is saying, having thus spoken to Kardama Muni, the Lord, who reveals himself only when the senses are in Krishna consciousness, departed from that lake called Bindu Sarovara, which was encircled by the river Saraswati. Pratyag Akshara. The same term Pratyag is used in Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter, where Krishna is expressing the knowledge that he's going to speak, so that the Mahima, glorification of the contents of the 9th chapter of devotional service. Pratyakshav agamamam dharmyam susukam kartam avyayam. This knowledge is meant to give direct perception of the self by realization, is Prabhupada's translation. Direct perception of the self by realization. Not theory, not intellectual, not mental adjustment, but directly experiential. One of the things that, this is a little note about knowing your audience when you're preaching to especially young people today. Especially young people today, not only, but especially young people today, they're searching for an experience. They don't exactly know what, but experiential exploration is something they want. And that's one of the reasons why kirtan is so popular. Because people that don't even know what kirtan is, they experience something. And they like what they experience, and so they seek out kirtan. It must have been 10 years ago, maybe more than 10 years ago, there was an article in the New York Times about the area up above New York, in the Woodstock area that once upon a time was famous for the Woodstock concert. They called it the Bhajan Belt. 10-12 years ago, before, you know, before it was as popular as it is today. What it is that people are experiencing, it'd be a little hard to describe. It's certainly not Shuddhanam. At best, it's Namabhas. But Namabhas is also very elevating. In fact, one of the, in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, when the Vishnu Dutas are describing to the Yama Dutas the effect of calling Narayana that Ajamila has done, they give different adjectives to describe types of Namabhas, so subcategories, and one of them is musical. Forget the Sanskrit term. Musical Namabhas. People don't even know. So, they not knowing what, or paintings of Krishna. I was in Texas, and there's a person that attended. They have a nice gathering where they're specifically gathering Western people. And now they started one group, two groups, now three groups. And there's, you know, different stages, kind of just learning, and then the intermediate, and then they, you know, they're going off in different directions. So one of the persons attending was a therapist. I don't know what, you know, adjective therapist, but psychotherapist, I guess. And she likes paintings of Krishna, she said. She said, her office is all over the office is paintings of Krishna or reproductions of paintings of Krishna, because she finds it's very helpful to make just paintings of Krishna, being in the room, help people become more peaceful. And my guess is she doesn't know exactly who is Krishna. because through devotion only can one understand Krishna. But so even this Abbas presentation of Krishna is very satisfying. One can experience relief from mental distress and other types of distress, even in that Abbas stage. But here, this is Kardama Muni. It's not Abbas. He directly saw the personality of Godhead. And how is that possible? So, Pratyag Aksha. The word for word is directly Pratyag Aksha by the senses. So this is Shuddha position. In the Shuddha position, one can directly experience Krishna. Let's go back a little bit. And what people today call spiritual, those circles you move in, you probably have heard somebody describing somebody as, oh, they're a spiritual person. And we'll, start down here and go up a little bit. So down here it means, commonly, my experience is, their nature is more in the side of the mode of goodness than most people. They're compassionate. They do good things. They're really good people. And, less passion, less ignorance. And that's spiritual. That's a spiritual person. And then, an Undervrindavan asked the other day, people that she has moved around with through different activities, they're people that have a faith in something, like a religious faith in something, and they have faith in God in different ways. And their faith is based upon something they experience. But their ability to understand Krishna in full isn't the same. It's not pratyak aksha, directly seeing Krishna like this. But it's something. Like Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, that he makes the faith strong of those who worship in different ways. Specifically, in that case, he's speaking of the devatas. He makes their faith strong. It's Krishna. So Krishna is there assisting persons in progressive stages. In comparing and contrasting, here we're hearing specifically seeing God. One time a reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, "Swamiji, have you seen God?" And Prabhupada leaned forward, "Would you believe me if I told you?" And the reporter said, "Yes." And he said, "Not only I've seen God, but I'm seeing him all the time. Now do you believe me?" And the reporter was stuttered, And one sense of seeing could mean something reminds you. Like Prabhupada gives this example. Sometimes, I don't see it so much anymore, but I used to see it more. Sometimes parents will keep their children's baby shoes, hang them on the string from someplace, and when they see, Prabhupada's point is, when they see the baby shoes, they don't just see their baby shoes, they see their child. Of course, now the child is older, not won't fit into those baby shoes. But they see their child. And what does that mean? It's not like they don't see the shoes, they see their child hanging from a string or something. It's a matter of the heart. Or you could say, in the mind's eye, they see. They see through their feelings. But this is different. This is directly seeing. He saw the form of Lord Vishnu. It wasn't imagination or hallucination. It wasn't this reminds me of that. It was the form of the Lord. So that requires, as Prabhupada is explaining here, senses that are purified in Krishna consciousness. In the purport he's writing, Aksha means knowledge perceived by material senses. So Adhokshaja is he who is beyond the material senses. He who is beyond the material senses. Just like the Bhagavatam verse, Pratyaksha Bhagamam Dharmyam Sut. No, excuse me. I can't recall the verse. It's devotional service is described. It's in the second chapter. What's the verse? First canto, chapter 2. Devotional service is described as service unto Udhoksaja, which is service means using your senses specifically, practically, not just a feeling. Bhakti is not just a feeling, it's practical activity using the senses in service of the master of the senses. But the master of the senses is beyond the senses to perceive, but you're using your senses to serve Adhoksaja, who is beyond the senses. Sounds contradictory. Huh? Savai Pungsang Kuro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Adhoksaja. Thank you. Bhakti Adhoksaja, serving Adhoksaja, he who is beyond the senses. It requires purified senses, is the simple solution. That is, so we have the gross material covering, and beneath the gross material covering, there's the subtle sense. Like, let's say, you have an eye problem. I know somebody had the lenses of their eyes taken out, new ones put in. Not just a cataract, but the lens is taken out. So it's and so the machine part can be broken, but the sense, subtle sense, is still there, and just change the machine part, then the sense can work again. So there's the gross sense and the subtle sense, and then there's the spiritual senses. So when the material contamination is removed, what the material contamination is what? It's seeing, thinking, and feeling independently of the Supreme Lord. The sense is perceiving an object as a means of an opportunity for enjoying independently of Krishna. That's the material covering. And when the material covering is removed, then the spiritual senses are active. Prabhupada gives the example of covering the tongue with cotton and eating. Not something that people normally do, but if you covered your tongue with cotton and started eating, you're not going to taste the food very well. But if you remove the cotton, then you can taste the food much better. So similarly, the purification of the senses means like removing the cotton, taking away the enjoying independently of Krishna tendency. That's it's called Maya. Because you can't enjoy independently of Krishna. But succumbing to Maya, or being under the influence of Maya, that's how one contemplates. And then, if that's taken away, what's left? Or, instead of that, amplify that using the senses in the service of Adhoksaja, he who is beyond the senses. And then, when you do that, then you can directly perceive him. Pratyak Aksha. directly perceive him. And that's the intention of devotional service. Through the purification part that we're undergoing presently, gradually come to the position where we're serving him and directly experiencing him. Not like indirectly, but eventually, when we're qualified, directly. Prabhupada spoke like this about deity worship. This is at the installation of Rukmini Dwarkadish in Los Angeles. He said, in part, you serve Krishna very nicely, and one day he will speak with you, and he will say, I am like this. putting it in very simple terms. So that's directly hearing. He who is beyond the senses to hear or to see or to experience, but it takes purified senses, and that's our program. In addition to chanting and reading, we do varieties of practical service, because the practical service is purifying our senses. Purifying our senses means taking away the tendency to independently enjoy and replacing it in the purified state with the tendency to bring pleasure to Krishna through each of the things that we do. And if it doesn't bring pleasure to Krishna, we don't do. And as we do the pleasure for Krishna element, the devote bhakti element, is becomes stronger and stronger and nurtured and prevails over the independent of Krishna enjoyment program. And Kardama had attained that, so the Supreme Lord came and showed himself. And then he departed and gave him the rest of his service, whereby he could fully purify himself of all taint of material desire. And there is a place in devotional service for connecting material desire with service to Krishna. Lord Brahma accomplished that. I'm thinking of giving a seminar on going from Sakam to Nishkam Bhakti and using examples from scripture to show it's possible. Not only possible, it's kind of standard. So we're not excluded from devotional service. We have the opportunity also. Lord Brahma, after all of the whole Brahma Samhita prayers, he discloses, makes a confession, I still have material desire. I want to create a universe. What do I do? And so you connect that, subordinate that desire in service to Krishna only, and it will purify you as much as the direct activities of hearing and chanting when combined and properly directed. So it's a nice section of Sri Brahma Samhita, and other places it's also described as here with Kardama Muni. He wants a wife. He wants children. Family. And there's certainly, that's material. It's all temporary. He wants in relation to the Supreme Lord. He wants in service to Lord Brahma to serve the personality of Godhead by assisting his father in that way. So it's mix. But by properly directing that mix, one can become fully purified. It's an important, very important practical message for us. Right within the Bhagavatam, we can look at the elements within Kardama Muni's life. Of course, his lifestyle is different than ours, but the principles can be applied in our lives if we become really clear what are the principles, and with devotion try to apply them, joined nicely with our hearing and chanting activity. Pratyak, Pratyakaksha, as Prabhupada said in the last sentence, all of this is just in this little phrase. So he unpacked it and then put it back together again. So I'm going to end here. Any discussion, comments, or questions? Yes.
I asked you this question several times, but I'm still juggling with this one. You mentioned the last part of your presentation about that is a standard, you know, this sakama kuniskama. It's a general, you know, procedure that engaging one's material desires and, you know, fully in the service of Krishna. And what I think, at least seeing, you know, what I'm going through sometimes, you know, with this thing with the music, at times I feel, you know, like a little bit of I don't think shame is the word, but, you know, like, no, because I have, you know, app services that has been given to me that take precedence over my, you know, personal desire that I would like to do music, you know, have the time to develop into doing music for Krishna. But, you know, this takes, you know, a step, but it doesn't go away. It's almost like they're haunting me, you know, like, oh, you know, I feel sad that I can't, you know, but, you know, I have to put in front services that I have now. So is it something that ones have to, you know, okay, just tolerate, just let it be? Because so far it hasn't gone away at all, you know? It just remains, I think, you hear me, I mean, I don't know how many times through the years you have heard me on this.
Yeah, we've had this discussion many times.
So, you know, is it healthy, or is it something that has to be attended, or is it the right thing just to, you know, and don't give it that type of importance, you know?
There's at least two, probably more, elements in your question. One is, to what degree should I do music or whatever someone else's something is, as opposed to, like, deferring because something else has taken the front position and that takes the back position. It's not that if you made a decision to say, I'm not going to do anything else but this, that it would go away. And that would be the solution, just like, I'm not going to do anything else. As if one could theoretically do such a thing, just do one thing. That's not the formula. The formula, rather, is when I was in China, I was asked they had assembly of a group of leaders, so they asked me to speak about time management. So one of the things I asked them to do was take a piece of paper, take 5-10 minutes, and write down your different roles. And so, what do you know, like, this and this and this. I have a family, I have a job, I have my devotional practices, and I have, you know, so they're different roles, and make a nice list. So then, now you have we each have our list. Now imagine just doing one thing and neglecting the other things. or doing all of them except for one thing and neglecting that one thing. Say, neglect your family, or neglect your sadhana, or neglect your job, or just neglect any one of them. Just you'll be imbalanced. The major roles are each something that you need to do. So, acknowledging that each of the roles must be there in your time management plan, so you assign weights, proportionate weights for this one gets this importance, and you'll put the sadhana one in first, the big rock example. And then, okay, how much can you, but so each of the roles of our life has some place. So now with the music role or component or element, design, and when you do that, following these nice examples, you do that for Krishna. Not because I got an itch, so I got to scratch it, then I go back and scratch it, and go back and. That's not how you get rid of itches. Just go and keep. There's something that's causing the irritation. It's not just scratch the itch and it's going to go away. It's going to stay. The body heals itself eventually. But so it's learning the art of, in that element of your life, with this part of your, one of your things for Krishna, is you do music for Krishna in whatever the form of that is. It isn't, not to the neglect of the other ones, the other roles, the other gifts that Krishna has given you, and you do each of those, and then for Krishna you practice doing for Krishna, and same with the music for Krishna. And that's the gradual purification of the senses, and so it can come to the point where, who knows, in the spiritual world, how that tendency will be used in Krishna's service. So, but get to the point where it's not just my psychophysical nature being exercised, but my spiritual identity being expressed. One of the families that I visited in just outside of Shanghai, another big city, I don't even know the name of it, it's like another, China's so big. Parents, this mother and father, disciples of Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and they're excellent artists. They could just be artists. But they have other things that they do. But part of their day, or part of their week, is they do art. It's not all that they do. They really like art, they're really good at it. They could just do art. But they have different things to do. And, one way to say is the satisfaction of making an offering unto Krishna through that expression of art. And it's not all they do. It's part of offering to Krishna what Krishna has given to them. And learning not to do it because we like it, but learning to do it because, and the other things that they do is also an offering unto Krishna. They're really good at other things. They're really good at bringing people to Krishna consciousness and training people in Krishna consciousness. They're really good in working with their daughter. She's a jewel. They're really good at making money. They're really good. And they have different roles, and so it's departmentalized, or it's planned. And then each thing, it's for Krishna, not just we're attached to our daughter, so we do that. Or it's attached to making money, so we do that. I was told the Chinese culture is very strong in economic development. I mean, atheistic economic, work hard. Anybody that has been in a workplace where have Chinese co-workers, you know what I'm talking about. They're tireless. They're there for umpteen o'clock every day, just working. They love to work. So this family started working, and they got really good at making money and working and working, and one day their little daughter said, "Mommy and Daddy, why are you working so hard? Your devotional practices have diminished. Why are you doing this?" And the light went on through the mouth of their small daughter. They were neglecting their art, and they're neglecting their child, and neglecting their sadhana, and neglecting making devotees, introducing people to devotional service, just to make money, night and day, and day and night, night and day. That's imbalance. So where there's balance, it's not just one thing. But each thing, as you seamlessly move from one thing to the next thing, it's for Krishna, for Krishna, for Krishna. A life that's, it's like a garden. It's full of for Krishna flowers. And this is one of them. So perhaps the irritation and why it doesn't go away is learning the art of how to do it for Krishna, not how much you do it. To be continued. Anything else? Okay. Yes? Yes?
Hare Krishna. We understand that we get purified through direct chanting and hearing, and also through the practical services.
Sure.
Through the practical services in different roles we have.
Yes.
How to work on getting rid of the tendency to enjoy independent of Krishna?
Because how to
work on tendency to enjoy?
Yeah.
Independent of Krishna.
Yes. Neglect that and invest instead in for Krishna. Take any one of the roles and turn the volume down on independent and turn the volume up on for Krishna. Same activity. And staying focused over there, the number one fuel, high octane fuel, is good chanting. And then you take that focus upon Krishna while chanting, not just doing as a duty, but focusing your attention on Krishna, the sound of Krishna's name, etc., than on your other activities. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, I'm just thinking, like, isn't it contradictory that we hear when one get purified, then only we see Krishna, but here we are hearing they still have some more purification to go through, like in the case of Kardamuni, Lord Brahma. That's what I'm thinking, Guru Maharaj.
I'm not sure what you're asking. Let me ask and see if I've understood what you're asking. Kardamuni already saw Lord Vishnu. How is it that he has more purification to undergo? That's your question? It's a nice question. It's a natural question. Lord Brahma. He saw. He understood. Yet he still had material desire. Now, it's a little different, because in his case, he was given the propensity to create. But there was also something there. That's why he was given that propensity to create. It's different than us. That's a good start, is like to understand what is apparent contradiction. It's not like, well, we also have a desire to try to serve Krishna, and we also have desire for other stuff. In the case of Lord Brahma, there's a term that's used as gona dharma, where it's not like we're ineligible, it's just we're at an immature stage of that development, where the attraction for the personality of Godhead with Kardamuni and Lord Brahma, there's other examples, so strong that the material tendency is practically eclipsed, but still there. So the Lord, in this case, came before Kardamuni, honored his devotion, and gave him the means by which that the material element of attraction could be completely gone. That's another example is Queen Kunti. She's not an ordinary Mataji. She's Queen Kunti. She's the mother of the Pandavas and intimate devotee of Krishna. And she's saying about herself that she has material desire or, you know, attachment. Devahuti says that about herself. So, you know, in one sense, we could feel a little relieved. Whew, I guess it's okay that I still have some material desire, because even these great personalities have material desire, and they're seeing Krishna. But, you know, there's degrees of that intimacy, you know, let's say sufficient in devotion, that the material tendency is practically inconsequential, but still there. The ability to see Krishna is not from our side, it's from Krishna's side. He discloses himself. Like I quoted Prabhupada saying, the deity will one day speak to you and say, I am like this. So it's from his side. So he can do whatever he likes. They go down a little bit, and when Narada in his previous life saw the personality of Godhead, who then disappeared and then said, normally I don't show myself, but you continue and you'll achieve perfection. But go up a bit, and these great personalities, they can see the Supreme Lord and still have some desire. So it's not a bucket. It's gradations. Anything else? Is that good?
Krishna Guru Maharaj, I kind of have a follow up question to Subhadra Prabhu's question.
Okay.
So while the irritation may be because one is not completely offering a particular tendency as a service to Krishna.
You're following up on Subal's question?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was also thinking that it seems like in some persons' situations or some devotees' lives, from the beginning there is opportunity to offer, you know, whatever maybe their conditioned tendencies or gifts in that sense, and there is satisfaction while doing that, and there's happiness even though it's not pure at that point.
Yes.
And yet in some other's life that opportunity is not fully there, and so one is somehow or the other, literally somehow or the other, they're doing services that are not matching their propensity, and it seems like they have this nagging kind of dissatisfaction, and so it seems more difficult perhaps for some. I was wondering if you can comment on that.
Yeah, well,
because there's also a place for just, when one is happy, one just feels inclined to doing more.
Well, this problem I have with the scenario that you just described,
yes,
is someone is engaged in something that's not according to their propensity. And I have a doubt about that. Meaning, it's one thing to say, take this example, I have a desire to do music. But at the same time, there may be many other things that are propensity. They're just not directly music. I mean, I know that Subal has other propensities besides music, and things that he becomes happy in, he does very well, he's clearly, from my estimation, gifted to do those things. But it's not music. So I'm not so sure. aside from his example, just go more broadly and say, if somebody is engaged in something again and again, it's just not their propensity. I can take my situation. I've fought back in the course of my devotional life. It's been, at least as a brahmachari, periods of very intense organization and then periods of completely no organization, just like out of it, like taken out of the, and go and travel. Just go and travel and none of that organization thing. And then after some time come back and just I don't like the the headache stuff in dealing with stuff. I like, and I feel I'm much better at it, and it makes me happy taking care of devotees and training devotees, and it doesn't have to be a big scale, just a one-on-one thing. I feel that's a gift that Krishna has given, and I like doing that, and I also like studying and for sharing the message and discussing with others that that's happiness, and the other is the headache. But I find that I'm doing it. Now, part of it is a sense of duty. Can I honestly say it's just not propensity? Maybe it's not propensity. Krishna's just given some ability because I'm dutiful, and so now, I don't feel I'm good at it. But still, I keep getting drawn into it. And then, you know, other people, whatever their situations may be. I'm just not so sure of the premise that says doing something that's not my propensity and I'm not feeling satisfaction, and do something that's propensity, meaning I like it and that's my propensity. I had a discussion with a brahmachari without the name. And, you know, so many years doing brahmachari activity, book distribution, whatever, you know, what brahmacharis are, the legs of society. They just do whatever anybody needs, and that's what a brahmachari does, and they're happy with that. But then skills to, and so it's a strong desire in this individual, and I haven't gotten any training, and now I'm at a stage where I'm looking for some training, and everyone's too busy. They've got the skill, but they're too busy to give me any training, and, you know, I'm frustrated. I don't regret having done so, but then I would say, in that case, I wouldn't say that the other activities were not propensity, but now here's something else that there's a desire to develop some ability in, and, you know, fan the spark, because that can be offered to Krishna too, and so the person feels satisfied. Anyway, so I'm having difficulty with the premise of your question to respond, you know, very directly to the question. I suppose it's possible. I suppose it's possible. But my overall experience is something like, you know, the response I gave to Subal about time management. There are different roles that have something to do with our nature, and there's a place for it. So if there's an imbalance, that's where there's discomfort. But some things that are that are natural for us, that aren't just imposed by some external expectation. You know, we need something to get done, here's a new Prabhu, let's plug him into the something we need to get done, whether it fits the first Prabhu or not, because we need the thing to get done. But that's also purification. Learning to do what Krishna wants. That's like a spiritual propensity. You've heard me give the example of washing pots. Was that my propensity? I wasn't being engaged according to my propensity. Washing pots was not my propensity. But learning to simply do what Krishna wants, that's like a spiritual propensity. So I'm not so sure about the premise of the question. You want to try again after all of that?
I'm thinking of some specific examples, devotees that we're caring for and so on, where there's this nagging dissatisfaction sometimes in certain individuals. And also I've seen, in contrast, where there's a lot of impurity, but somehow or the other, when they were engaged in something that is just, it enlivens them, even if it's not pure at all, but it's sustaining them and they're able to go forward happily in their Krishna consciousness, as opposed to just doing something else, which is,
well, that's
even it's, you know, it's service and it's spiritual propensity and they understand it, and it's not somehow giving that same enlivenment.
As you know,
yeah,
life is complex. And so, in different persons, cases, just engage, encourage them to do that what they like to do. And they'll become gradually purified. Even if it's, like you said, even if it's not at all done with the right motivation, and it's a good beginning. And then some other persons, and some other persons, some other persons. So, it, you know, what is appropriate can become very complex. And it takes discerning capacity to see, you know, all the factors, where the person's at, what they need, what will really help them make the next step. Are they able to make that next step? Encourage them to make that next step. That may be doing something they don't like to do, which is a good step for them. Because it's not doing what they don't like to do is good, but if it's for Krishna and learning that, then that's good. So it's the variables are diverse, and it takes some gift from Krishna to be able to encourage people and according to what's best for them. That's an art. It's not cookie cutter science kind of thing. That's my response to that one. You use your best instinct, and Krishna will be your teacher in the different situations. Be sensitive to if you encourage this, or if you encourage that, or the other thing. That you're flexible, and you know, as things move and change in their lives, they can be flexible too. That's fine. It's complex and fluid also with these things.
Since this discussion is going on, some thoughts that come to my mind is that sometimes the tendency is that service needs to be done. It may not suit your propensity or whether you like it or not like it, but you jump in and you keep doing it. Okay, today it's this, and after a few months it's that, but things need to be done. So the thought that's coming to my mind is that doership mentality.
Is that what?
Doership.
Okay, let's just say until we're purified, that's going to be in there regardless of what we do. Until we're purified. Sure, it's in there. But it can also be a few other things too.
How much focus should be there that this is my propensity and this is not my propensity?
The question you're asking is the reverse of what she was asking.
Yeah.
From the position of one who's guiding someone, how much should I look to encourage propensity only? Or from me, the position of the servitor? And it's different depending upon so many variables. I had a discussion with Gopal Bhatta Prabhu about this, and I can't remember. He had a formula, and the formula was something like, you know, a certain element of propensity, and a certain element of surrender, and a certain element of, you know, our founder Acharya and what he wanted. And then step back and be detached and ask some other persons. And he does this with his life. He wants to move in a certain direction right now. Internet preaching. It's like growing and growing and growing. But rather than just like do it because he has a vision for it, he has some enthusiasm for it, he has, through his business, he learned about how to do it, got some, you know, some knowledge about it. He's thinking of requesting to be the minister of internet preaching, global minister of internet preaching, like really make it happen, because the potential is huge. He's, you know, he's looking at these different variables and consulting persons who, you know, for him, they're like, they're good barometers of But it's not, that's not it. That's not, I mean, that's not the beginning and end there. So to this, propensity, okay, and the circumstance, no, not the doership, but the circumstance, what's really needed. Our founder Acharya, and how he acted at different times. I mean, that's like subjective, but there are things that he did at different times. And becoming familiar with his life, checking in with Super Soul, persons that are guiding you, and then it's as I said, it's not just one thing, it's multiple things, and it's fluid. Okay? Not a cut and dry answer. Last question.
What a topic. So to further complicate this, what if you see, we have a natural tendency, or at least I do too, to want to do something you're not very good at.
You like doing things you're not good at.
No, you have the aspiration. So.
Oh, you aspire to do to play Mridanga like Mukunda, but
correct.
You're really
I can't play it.
Good.
My example, my wife would appreciate this, is I can't sing.
Ah.
But I love to sing. So my point is so over the course of I can just relate to this particular sense, there's a desire, some devotees want to do some services that in my humble judgment they may not be very good at.
Yeah.
But you can see that gives them a lot of satisfaction, and they're really genuine about wanting to do it. So much so that it may take away from the true value of the service if somebody was truly had the propensity to do that service.
I've seen that.
So an example would be somebody who just wants to preach. They just really want to be a preacher. And
they make masses all over the place.
And they make a mass, and the mass is so much so where, there may be a new person coming here for the first time, and they're like, wait a minute, what just happened here? So my point is, or my question is, how does that fall into services and propensity and duty, the doership portion? The floor needs to be mopped. It needs to be mopped. It doesn't matter if there's a propensity or not. And then there's the one where, I really like to, I really like music and I want to be good at it, and how much time should we devote to that? And there's the one where I want to be a preacher and I'm not a very good preacher. Where does the leadership have to make that decision? And say,
Depends on how much damage the person makes. You can have a short leash or a long leash. But it's definitely something from an engaging others position, one has to supervise, and we'll say in the absence of supervision, it's messy. Or let's say, as you described, for example, persons get turned away. I mean, it's one of the things as those engaged in book distribution think about, that as I engage in book distribution and people come to the temple, and the situation when they come to the temple is, yikes, I don't know if I want to come here ever again, kind of thing. So then, I have to be concerned about what's happening at the temple and the quality of and being a part of the solution rather than be discouraged. Your your question is broad, is like, to what extent? Well, it depends on the skill of the one who's engaging people, of the leader. You know, how much and to what extent they engage somebody. You know, best is to engage somebody where they're getting some encouragement, but they're doing at least damage if they're not so good at it. Let's say, you know, the kirtan ones, the besides preaching one. Misery loves company, and so I can share with you that I experience traveling around the people that can't sing sit right in the front and have the loudest voice. And it's really distracting. But it's okay because they're enthusiastic and they're enjoying singing off-key. They don't know that they're singing off-key. They're just enjoying singing loudly off-key. And it makes it difficult for those that sing on-key to follow because they're so loud. And they do it, you know, you can say, but they don't know anything other than loud. So they'll get purified. And others will learn, you know, tolerance. Krishna's mercy. But, you know, we may not engage that person in leading the kirtan. They can be in the audience responding. And, you know, maybe give them an instrument to play so that they'll be more attentive to the instrument they're playing than to how loud they sing off key. Anyway. It's like it's managing the situation. But they're not harming so much. So, it's again, this variable thing. It's not, it's important, but we want to encourage people, not discourage people. And then, you know, by encouraging someone who doesn't do the thing nicely, they discourage more people than that one person who you're encouraging. By their blunderbust way of doing the thing they're not so good at doing because they like to do it. So it requires management. And like one of the overall pictures, take it broader, and that is how to have a community where we honor the fact that primarily the member is here because they have some attraction for Krishna. So that's where the respect goes. And then there's some ability and there's some shortcoming. And now, so as a community, how do you deal with the shortcomings? Whether it's they don't know how to preach but they like to preach, or they don't sing well but they sing real loud, or whatever it is. The shortcoming, how do we regard the shortcomings? How do we, on the one hand, respect and then be in the mood of trying to help to elevate? So it's, you know, one can say the manager has a very important role in all of that, but the members also have an important role in all of that, of being tolerant and also knowing where to draw the line and say, manager, can you, you know, this person that likes to preach very much is wrecking our preaching. So, you know, but on the other hand, you know, appreciating, wow, this person really likes to preach. Let's try to find a way for that person where, you know, their desire to serve Krishna is fulfilled and they're doing the least damage, they're getting the most purified. Maybe they need, you know, some adjustment in what they're doing. Maybe they need some specific training in what they're doing. Maybe they need to be under someone's supervision more or something, part of a team or something to connect that propensity and, you know, purify it a bit. I'm going to end. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki.